Hello, we're testing 1, 2. Can you hear me? I'm absolutely petrified and I'm shaking and there's cold air blowing on me as well. The reason I stood up was because this time last year I woke up every day and I wanted to die, I wanted to kill myself. I didn't have the guts to do it, like you hear a lot of people say. And I didn't know about NA, and in 8 days' time I would, and this was the first meeting that I come to. And Annie had the great idea of making me sit on the front row, and I looked into that person's eyes who was speaking, and they told my story back to me. It's a cliche, but it's true, and that's why this program works. And I kept coming back. I think it was that night that I heard someone share about this fainting game that they used to do at school, and I used to do that game at primary school, and I loved it, and I wanted more and more and more of it. And it's only in retrospect I can say that my addict behaviour was there way before I picked up drugs of any form. My family life wasn't particularly happy, but then I hear of other people's family lives who weren't happy either, but they never went to pick up drugs and do the crazy things that we all do. But I was quite sensitive, and I really absorbed all the feelings and emotions around me, and I was quite serious as a child. I think I still am, actually. As a result, my behaviour, it was off the wall. By the time I got to secondary school, I was addicted to pornographic magazines, and I was harming myself in various ways. And then along came alcohol, and I was getting drunk by the time I was 13, having sex, and just doing crazy, crazy things. And I knew I was really unhappy, and teachers didn't know what to do. My dad didn't know what to do. He'd try and like lock me up for the summer, thinking that would cure me. But as soon as September come around, I'd be out there doing the same old things again. My mum tried giving me freedom, and that didn't work because I just ran riot. And this just carried on and on and on. I did get a job when I left school, but kind of gave it up because it kind of got in the way of having fun. Lived in a squat, was introduced to more drugs. And then the rave scene came along, so you all know how old I am now. And that was great, and I loved it because it was like people coming together for one cause, and that's really kind of what I wanted. My family was all over the place. It wasn't like a solid unit, but in the rave scene, you know, with 1,000 other people screaming and on their whistles, I felt really at home, and I loved that. But the trouble was that I carried on doing the rave scene while everyone else had stopped. Do you know what I mean? And we're still shuffling about in my Travel Fox trainers and blowing on my whistle, and everyone had like really moved on. I moved to London when I was 18. I got quite a good job. I just used to think I was quite lucky. I got quite a good job. And with that, I was able to travel the world and work with that, which was great, because as soon as I fucked off one person, I could move on to another country and just leave my troubles behind me. And about my mid-20s, I really knew something was wrong, and, you know, and the fantasies of suicide were getting stronger and stronger. And, you know, I got prescribed medication, which was all right, because that kind of levelled my mood for a while. But I'd still end up... You know, I never had a relationship. I always wanted, like, some guy to rescue me, but as soon as I found a nice guy, you've got to go now. Or I'd be in the other position where I had complete dominance over this other person and then no respect for them either. I, you know, went for counselling. Like I said, I was on medication. I even joined a church. I did all these things because I knew that something was wrong with me. I think at that point I wasn't sure whether I was self-medicating because I was unhappy or whether I was unhappy because of all the drugs I was taking. I really didn't know which one, but I knew that I didn't feel right. Fast forward kind of 18 years and nothing much has changed. I had a string of abortions. I was raped 3 times because I couldn't defend myself. And these were the consequences of my using. Thankfully, I didn't take the kind of drugs that really did damage to my health, but mentally, I did as much damage to myself as I possibly could, I think. I know. So this time last year, I felt like I'd run out of places to run in myself. And I was at work and I had a breakdown, and some kind of quick thinking woman at work took me to Thrift Street, and I asked the nurse if she could find the Maudsley Hospital to come and pick me up and take me away. So I just wanted to lie down and have a break from myself, you know. All my counsellors, I used to say to them, I want to go on holiday, but I want to leave myself behind. That's how I felt. I just wanted to be out of me. And anyway, this nurse said, hold on a minute, and I thought she was going to make the call to the Maudsley, and she brought back this guy who had no teeth at the time, and you might know who he is, DJ, and he said to me, he said, what's your drug of choice, darling? And I thought, is he going to offer me some? Great, because I was on a bit of a come down then. But I told him, and he said, come with me, come over the road to the coffee shop. And I don't know why, but I did. And he sat me down with five women who kind of surrounded me a little bit, penned me in a bit. They probably see I was ready to bolt. And and they started telling me how I felt. And then they started telling me what I thought of them, which was even stronger, which was like, you know, who the fuck are you and what do you know about me, and you never had a drug problem like me and you don't know how I feel. And they gave me their numbers, and then one of them said, but we're going to take your number, actually. And I thought, oh shit, I can't get out of this one. And one put me in the cab home. I went home, I managed to get some sleep, and I just kept getting texts from them. And I was thinking, what do they want from me? You know, some kind of weird cult kind of thing. And I thought, well, I've always kind of quite fancied the idea of a cult, so, you know. And so, anyway, I get some sleep that night. I phoned up my family that night as well, and I kind of told my mum, and I felt such relief. I felt such relief that I didn't have to pretend anymore, because I was a functioning addict, however helpful that term is. And I was very, very good at pretending that everything was okay when I would see them, which was probably about three times a year, and they only lived down the road, really. And then the next day, one of the ladies sitting in the front row phoned me, and we met in the coffee shop, and she brought me here. And like I said, I just couldn't believe what was going on, and I couldn't believe what I heard, that other people had felt like me. I did think I was different. And that kind of gave me the hope to at least try another meeting. And so I don't think I did that weekend, but I certainly did on the Monday and the Tuesday and the Wednesday, and on and on and on. And I did my 1990, and I met my sponsor the first night I came as well. I don't think we talked much. I think I cried a lot, didn't I, Penny? And I probably did that actually for about the first 3 months. I felt such immense relief, you know, and I don't think I really heard much, but I heard exactly what I needed to hear. Various bits from the readings. I think the Just For Today one was the one that really stuck out for me, because I had to let go of everyone and everything that had been in my life before. So I really clung on to that Just For Today. You know, my thoughts would be on my new associations and people who aren't using. So then I stopped kind of being suspicious of everybody, and realised that this was kind of like the rave scene, but without the drugs, you know. And I didn't have to spend any money either, and I didn't have to worry about what I was going to wear, or where the party was, or whether I was on the guest list or not. You know, this includes everybody. It doesn't matter how tall, fat, thin you are. You know, that's what I love about it, because I'm quite an idealistic person, and to me, this is the ultimate community of people, you know, and it's great. 4 minutes. So I've been working through the steps with my sponsor, as suggested, and I have done what I've been told, which meant, you know, doing service. I think I picked up a literature commitment after a couple of weeks. I'm just about to finish that one and take on the GSR position at that meeting. What else do I do? I do minute secretary for P&I. Like a few months ago, I was even in Belmarsh Prison giving, sharing my experience, strength and hope with the staff there, and I kind of like had an out-of-body experience. I thought, my God, I'm here, they're listening to me, you know, and it was amazing. And the helpline as well, that for me, that is the most amazing part of service. It reminds me every time I'm there for 2 hours where I came from and that I don't want to go back there. You know, this isn't for me a case of putting down the drugs. This is a spiritual disease. This is a mental disease for me that's been there for me from day one, and nobody else caused it, and no one's to blame for me having it. I've got it, and I'm getting acceptance around that, and for the first time in my life, I'm giving something back to people, and I'm just really chuffed to be here. I'll leave it there. Thank you.